Hi, I'm Martin from Badwell. I just want to know how you put in the concept on today.
I had an absolute ball. Every time I go to one of these events, you get a chance to meet the fans, you get a chance to talk to the show, talk about the show with the fans. It's just fantastic. I mean, I'm a fan of the show myself, but to meet such a passionate, wonderful, interested and interesting group, it's a real pleasure for me. I think sometimes, you know, when you're kind of doing what you do and you think, oh, is that okay? And then you come here and you get feedback from people who absolutely live, breathe and eat Westeros, and you think, yeah, did okay. I just love these events, and today has been an absolute ball.
Can't really add into that. I think BD here is, sorry, I call him BD because we're both Ian and it gets confusing otherwise. So I think BD here has covered pretty well every base there. And the thing that you're very much aware of is that they know far more about the show than you do.
Yeah.
You
know, one of the things about it, you get put to the test, don't you? You get tested every time. I get nervous when fans approach almost. What do they know? What do they know?
They know so much, and what they don't know, they sort of like, you know, they're constantly in touch with each other, and they've got all sorts of theories about it. And well, half the time, we don't know in the same way. And plus, you know, now you get the scripts, and we only get the scripts that we're in. Used to be we were able to see everything, but they've got so sort of like, you know, nervous about letting stuff out. You only see the scripts that you're in, so you don't necessarily know everything that's going on. And when you're asked for your theories, you sort of think, well, what do I know, you know?
It's much more effective. It means that when you say, I don't know, you really don't know. So it works quite well.
And it's a situation where it's okay to say, I don't know, you know.
But a lot of fun, basically.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Hi, as Kareem from Metro, Ian B. So in a series that doesn't pull its punches when it comes to violence, your character met especially bloody end. And I was wondering if you could talk us through, like, filming that scene and like how hard did you and Maisie Williams have to work to like really do it justice?
Well, from the very beginning, you know, I figured that Merrin was going to bite the dust somewhere. And David and Dan, they're pretty classy guys. They phoned me to tell me, Merrin Morghulis, that's your lot, chump. But they said that you'd see a really nasty side to the character and I'd have a great death. I thought I was going to get to kill somebody popular. I thought, you know, I was going to get to kill Bronn or something. And I got the script and I'm reading it and I'm going, oh my God. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no. It was awful. I mean, I have three kids at home. If somebody touched one of my children, let me tell you something, it would take that person a lot longer to die than Merrin. Really? So, yeah, they were extraordinarily upsetting scenes to do. And the biggest challenge of my acting career, bar none. In a way, I was so grateful to the boys for giving me this, you know, giving me this opportunity. Because it's what an actor lives for, to get scenes like this. The actual end, when Maisie and I were filming, Maisie is just an incredible young actress. Absolutely incredible. One of the most stunning young actresses I've ever seen. She's absolutely wonderful. We decided, her and I, very, very early, that in this particular scene, we had to go for it. And we went for it. No point. And I had complete trust in her. She had complete trust in me. It was technically very difficult as well, because the eyes, we filmed that last scene on my last day, unusually enough. And it was all filmed in order. So the last take was the last take for me. But very early on in the day, my eyes went out, so I had to have prosthetics. And for the last 7 or 8 hours on set, I was completely blind, which was really weird. Blood tubes coming up, blood going down my nose. It was just technically, you know, it was very difficult. Being blind actually really helped me show a vulnerability to that character at that moment in time. So it actually helped. But it was very, very difficult, and I just thank whatever gods are up there that I had Maisie to do it with, because she is stunning, wonderful.
I mean, you said you haven't killed anyone popular. I mean, without you saying anything that might give away a huge plotline, did Merrin kill Syrio?
I'm sorry, calling Syrio popular. I'm sorry. He may be popular with the fans, but I think Merrin was completely misunderstood.
No, I'm going to message Miltos right now. You said that.
Tell the water dancing little git I said hello. No, I mean, I'm pretty certain Syrio went at that point. I would be astonished if we saw Syrio again before the final curtain. I don't think Merrin would have left Syrio alive. If, as some fans believe, Syrio became Merrin, Well, surely that would have been revealed whenever Merrin died. Surely then he would have appeared, which would have actually been really weird, see, if Arya, seeing she just killed Ciryo. But no, Ciryo, I believe Merrin killed him. Merrin did not disobey Cersei, ever. It was the only redeeming feature I ever found in the character, his fierce loyalty to Cersei Lannister. The only one.
Well, in my own case, it's season five, I guess. You know, it has to be the fight. You know, boys, adrenaline, you know, you kind of just love it.
Swords.
You know what I mean? You know, you just get off on it. So although it was challenging, it was actually kind of exciting, you know. But that scene was not that difficult in that all of the harpies, every single one of them, were stuntmen. So they all know what they're supposed to be doing. And I worked through it, first of all, with the stunt coordinator, and then I worked with the guys. So, I mean, I know that everybody around me is there to kind of like, you know, do what we're meant to do. And with a bit of luck, if I know my routines and I follow their lead, I should be safe, and they should be safe, which is probably more to the point.
I thought you did very well.
I thought you were edge.
You were dashing, man. The moment you stepped into that room, the sword came out with such grace.
Well, I do have to say, I was chuffed with the fact that I did the whole thing myself, because sometimes people ask you, you know, did you have a stuntman stand in? And I didn't, and I wouldn't have wanted it, and nor would they have wanted it, if at all possible, you know. But, I mean, one of the big issues, obviously, with fights, especially with actors, is because your adrenaline does get going, is that you lose the plot, you know, and before you know it, you've hit somebody, and you've hit them harder than you meant to, and it's like, oh, geez, you know, but, you know, fortunately, nobody died, so we were fine.
I mean, I would say that for me, that the real scene that gave me a lot to really think about, both before and after, was actually the first scene of my character's return in season five. When Lancel came back, it was a really weird season in a lot of ways for my character. It was a really sort of an extraordinary experience and sort of story to tell, because I think when he returned, this figure that stands before Cersei is so kind of so clearly unlike anything we've ever seen. But what was amazing for me about the character to read was that the rate at which Lancel Lannister appears in the first episode and goes from being someone who you could easily confuse with being a kind of namaste shanti sort of member of a really fairly pacifistic sort of monastery, to really actually being someone in the second scene, becoming someone who is incredibly militant and is actually hiding underneath this, as it was in the first scene, this kind of lucid, totally disconnected, sort of almost come out of like a real trauma, lip quivering from the fact that he's actually really trying at the start to almost convince himself that he's under control, and he is not under control. He's trying desperately to remain under control. And then the way that he finds that control is through violence and through this faith and through commitment. And I don't want to be too intense about it, but given current affairs, the fact that we were filming this series whilst current foreign affairs are going on was even more harrowing, because it was I couldn't stop going, gosh, it feels as though the timing of this is so terrifyingly inappropriate and appropriate. So you know, the first scene for me was a big deal, I felt, because I got there that day, did my best to kind of bring that across, and for the rest of the season, I had to move very quickly, and in some ways non-sequentially, to go from disconnected to actually really quite violent to really damaged and broken and horrible. And I know exactly what Ian means about when it comes to the adrenaline rush of getting in a fight, because when I had to arrest the High Septon in my second scene, bursting into that brothel with Paul Bentley. I had my nails were about as long as this microphone, because I'd been growing them for the show because he's so feral. I went and I picked him up, and I didn't realise, because I was in such in the zone, that I had Wolverine his ribs as I was reaching underneath him, and he didn't even notice either. And suddenly we just went, what's that? What is that on your wrist? And I just cut him up basically by accident. So yes, I did make the mistake of going a bit too accidentally too far with that. But he was naked. He was naked of the day he was born, and I felt very very apologetic for that.
So can't wait to work for you.
Ah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly. Really, yeah. Looking forward to put me in an action film. See what happens. Anyway, it was a lot of fun.
For me, I mean, quite clear, it was episode 10. It was the most horrific 2 days. I had 3 children at home. The fact that the casting in Game of Thrones is so perfect, they couldn't have found 3 more beautiful angels to beat than the 3 they found. And the young actresses that were involved, Hattie, Isabel and Bella, were absolutely fantastic. Instinctively, they were wonderful young actresses. They made that scene, because if they hadn't reacted the way they did, it wouldn't have worked. They were fantastic. What made it worse was that, you know, you can't stay in character. So as soon as he yelled cut, I had to come out and be in again. I couldn't stay in character. But it was the most upset I think I've ever been, ever, in front of a camera, because there were times when I'd say, like, I'm just going to the bathroom, and I'll go to the bathroom, and I'll burst into tears. Now, I will promise you when I say that stick did not touch those children once, and I will promise you when I say those kids had a great day, their parents were there. The Game of Thrones set is a very protected and very protective set. You know, everybody is really carefully looked after. But it was horrible to act the role of a man who took pleasure in doing that. It was the most upsetting scene I've ever done. And honestly, I'm really genuinely very proud of everybody involved in that scene that we pulled it off. Everybody who was in that scene, we pulled it off, and I was really pleased about that.
We don't do short questions.
Ask an actor to talk about himself?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well.
How you say it?
Truth believe, miffed. In fact, I knew before I even saw the script, because I got the schedule. And I, in a way, unfortunately, I'd read the books. So I had expectations for season 5, and as soon as I got the schedule, I thought, well, there's something up here, because I thought I'd be doing more weeks, and in fact, I was doing less than normal. So immediately, I mean, I thought, well, they must be writing me out. And I asked the line producer for confirmation, and he said, basically, above my pay grade, you know. So I then said, well, get the boys to give me a ring. Well, I got the script first, and then it was evidenced in the scripts, and then eventually the boys gave me a ring. If I'm honest, I was a bit dischuffed by that, because I felt that I should have known. It wouldn't have made any difference, but I felt as a matter of just courtesy, I should have known beforehand, you know. And I was disappointed, because I was enjoying playing the part. I was looking forward to actually getting more meat in the part. And I had dared to presume that I'd at least go into season 6 and who knows further. But, you know...
See, there was your picture take right there. Never presume in Game of Thrones.
Yes,
ever.
I obviously shouldn't have dared to presume, and as my colleague here on the right will no doubt, well, has already agreed, you know. But, you know... So be it. The deed is done, and I'm on to other things, and that's that. But I do miss it.
You might, come
happily, I would happily have stayed on, you know.
You might come back as a White Walker, which is more than I can do, because I have no eyes left. Don't know I'm a White Walker.
No, if I came back as a White Walker, my character would probably have more soul if he did.
No, I think that's it.
Hi, guys. As your character was fairly responsible for the downfall of Cersei in the last season, are you expecting some harsh retribution for your character next season?
Again, as Ian Beattie, I think his name is, has said, I have no particular expectations. I think it's very important not to have expectations. I do feel instinctively that the faith militant still definitely has a bone to pick. It by its very nature, it wants to kind of purge what is basically unpurgeable. So, I think that in that sense, certainly definitely falls into the crosshairs pretty significantly. I don't know much about the retribution side of it, but I do think that certainly the battle that has really begun, the war really that has really begun between the crown and the faith is probably one of the most major political events that's going on in King's Landing at the moment, and that is to say that there is something that must be continued in that storyline. There is something that must be seen in some way, and for the sake of my character and having a job, I hope the faith comes out on top, quite frankly, and the whole power, the whole system crumbles before us, and we replace the Red Keep with another sept. That would be my greatest desire.
Well, I may be beyond redemption, but I can't possibly endorse that.
That's why we had you.
I think you've pissed off Cersei Lannister. I think you're in trouble, just personally speaking. Yeah. I'm speaking as a fan now with absolutely no knowledge or input.
But it's one of those battle royale situations that you're building up to, you know. And I mean, the great thing about having this situation is that when you have got a character with such history of negligence and suffering as Cersei Lannister, and you have this new character of Jonathan in the flesh of Jonathan Pryce as the High Sparrow, I mean, Jonathan Pryce has brought something to the character which is so perfect, and for me was actually really quite inspiring to see, which is the ability to be totally reasonable, totally and utterly reasonable. And make total sense and be completely convincing in his political and social arguments, which is, you don't seem to quite, as he says with the Queen of Thorns, you don't seem to quite understand. You're not quite able to really understand the simplicity of what's happening. I serve the gods, and the gods demand justice. And it is a perfectly apt and appropriate line for the simplistic nature of their ideology. But he will never, ever give you reason to suspect that he's actually orchestrating militant movements. So it's a great battle royale in that sense.
Hi, Ben Shires from Audible. Game of Thrones has never been afraid to kill off, well, pretty much any main characters, lesser characters, whoever. I mean, the fact that two of the three panel members are now dead, I think, speaks volumes. When it comes to the new series and beyond, we kind of caught up with books, so no one can really second guess where their characters are going to be. Does that mean that everyone's walking around on eggshells now, sucking up to producers, making exclusive to people, that kind of thing? What will the atmosphere be like?
I don't know, because I'm not there. You don't know, because you're not there.
No, but I would suspect that most actors will be just kind of like putting a brave front on it and doing what they do, and nobody would be sucking up for fear that it looks like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they'll just be getting on with their thing, and suddenly, sorry, you're gone.
I do believe that, you know, George, the genius, Mr. Martin, who created this incredible world, I do believe him and David and Dan would speak on a regular basis. I'm certain of that. They couldn't not. I mean, for example, I get the feeling that when Book 6 comes out, and this is what, for me, is so exciting. This is the first season 6, the one they're making at the moment. This is the first season where there is no guide whatsoever. Even when season 5 came out, A Dance with Dragons was out, and, you know, storylines were known. This is the first season where everybody is completely in the dark. As I say, I'm sure David and Dan and George know that perfectly well. But I, for one, as a fan of the show, I'm extraordinarily excited because I have no idea.
Mm.
I like that. I don't actually like spoilers. I don't want the surprise to be spoiled. I don't want my Christmas presents on Christmas Eve. You know, I'm really looking forward to season 6, completely in the dark, and anything could happen.
I think he's absolutely right. I think one of the lucky things about the fact that we've now gone into uncharted territory is the fact that there is actually something worse than having an unpleasant surprise, such as your character dying, fall before you. And that surprise is believing very firmly, based on the books, that you were good for the next season, and then actually finding out that they've changed the storyline and that you're done. That's not a nice way to discover your situation. we've now gone into territory where the storyline is liberated of expectation in terms of the actors that are involved. And it means basically that the storyline is in the hands of people who are trying to make it loyal to the show, make it loyal to the books, but also maximize its enjoyment and maximize their own interpretation of what will make it better. So that means that for us actors, I think that it gives you a sense of kind of just sully forth, and whatever happens, happens. No one is... Jack, Dan, and David will certainly talk with George, but there's no precursor that is sort of moved, that is puppeteering what we're going to do in the show anymore. It's in our hands, and that's a nice feeling to have. That's a very nice feeling to have.
Yeah. What is interesting is that if the rumor is true, and I think it is, ideally, series 6 and book 6 will come out at the same time, more or less, sometime in the spring. Book 6 is apparently going to be published. And it would be fascinating, because it's a completely open question. Will Book 6 actually try and square the circle and show how, whatever deviation there's been, this is how these storylines are coming together?
Mm.
Or have they actually agreed, listen, your agenda is different from mine, you follow your journey, I'll follow mine, and we actually get two separate resolutions of this journey so far? And it's quite legitimate and quite possible that it will be the second, because the demands of book writing are completely different from the demands of television.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the things that have happened TV-wise have been because the boys have now created for themselves an expectation that they must have shock value in each and every episode.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow or another, they've got to do that. The book doesn't have those pressures on it in the same way, and it may well be that, as I say, they'll just do different journeys. And in some ways, that'll be fascinating, Oh, so you've done this and we've done that.
And I think we would even take pleasure in that. We would see our characters going in a direction that we didn't go in the show, and therefore you are suddenly kind of, somehow you're still kind of going in that in a way. I felt that way with Lancel when I got the story. I suddenly thought the Lancel that's been put before me is not the book's Lancel, who has long, grey, falling out hair, is thin as a stick, and is essentially sort of... literally was got one foot in the coffin, as is mentioned in the books. He's not that. They didn't write him like that in this show. He was not. He had to come back, and he had to be lost, straight away lost. There wasn't a devolution. He's gone. Most people think he's dead. This other entity, this ghost of Christmas past, suddenly comes back.
I can't actually remember or think of a television show that has been in this situation. Where you have this incredible set of books written by this genius, and you have this incredible television series by these geniuses, and there's this excitement over, will the book come out before the TV? I can't remember a TV show like that, and that is the magic of this program. That is the program these boys and girls have created, and it has been such a privilege to be a part of it. I think Game of Thrones is a game changer for television. I really do. I think we're entering a golden age of television with all the new streaming platforms, the way technology is going, the way social media is going. And I have never been so excited to be an actor in television than I am right now. I think we're entering a golden age, and I think Game of Thrones has set a seriously high benchmark.
Hi, sorry. Green again from the Metro. If you guys could have played any other character in the show, who would have been and why?
You've answered this question before very well. You go first.
Well, I mean, no, all I was going to say, if I were other than who I am, are you?
I guess that's such a good answer. It just opens all doors. A dragon.
I mean, both from the books and from the series, it's a great character. I've just always been intrigued by that character and sort of like followed it, but, being who I am, I did actually read for Tywin, but I wouldn't want to compete against Charles. And I did read for Mormont, funnily enough. But I was very happy being Barristan. I don't know who else I might like to have been. That's enough to be getting out of.
It was the same for me. The audition process for season one, you get seen for maybe one, maybe two, maybe three roles in the initial castings. I read for Jory Cassell. Ned Stark's right-hand man, who Nikolai very kindly finished off very quickly. And I got Mirror. So I wasn't in it for half of one season. I was in it for five seasons. Jamie Seeds, who played Jory Cassell, was perfect as Jory Cassell. He was absolutely perfect. He nailed it. And he did a much better job than I would have done if I'd been casting it. The casting, in my opinion, just speaking as a fan of the show, is so good that when you see somebody in a role, you couldn't think of anybody else doing it. You couldn't think of anybody else playing that role. So I was very happy with Sir Meron, and I wouldn't have wanted to be anybody else because they would have done it better.
I auditioned for Joffrey. I wouldn't want him to play him. I was so happy. I was so... No, not because of the nature of his character. It would have been fun to do, but I would not be as satisfied as I am had I not played Lancel, because it was a very important story for me to be able to go from a young and rather innocent and, you know, in some ways fairly shortly expose Lannister to a member of the Faith Militant. And that maturity, let's not forget, is also really part of why the character Lancel is who he is. It's not just religion and fanaticism. He's older. He's literally older. It's small things. I weighed about 40 pounds more than I did playing Lancel the Sparrow than I did playing Lancel the Squire or Lancel the Knight. He's bigger and he's taller. He's older. It's why most of the people who were downstairs when they saw photos of me as Lancel in season 2 with gold locks and Lancel in season 5, they go, was it the same person?
They actually thought you were recast.
Most people thought I was recast. By the way, I took great pleasure in that. I was allowed to tweet and put out on social media the fact that Lancel is coming back. I was allowed to, but I didn't until, well, basically, I was at the premiere and it was common knowledge. Because I did not want to. I wanted the walk up to Cersei to be as confusing and revelatory as it was. I definitely would have wanted to play Lancer the whole time. I'm very lucky in that sense.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.